Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. President Carter's chief economic advisors meet at the White House today with representatives of the country's major tire and rubber companies and the head of the Rubber Workers Union. They'll discuss efforts to obtain a new contract between the union and the manufacturers. The White House says the administration officials will not propose specific terms of a settlement, but will discuss, quote, the critical importance to the nation's anti-inflation effort that this settlement be within the pay standards, which means an annual increase of no more than 7%. But as we hear from Chris Kelly in Columbus, Ohio, what the Rubber Workers Union is after far exceeds the guidelines.
According to Union President Peter Bomarito, the tentative settlement initially accepted by two of the big four manufacturers boosts wages and benefits by more than 30% over the next 3 years. Bomarito won't reveal details, but admits his union negotiators ignored the wage guidelines established by President Carter.
I did not negotiate anything under the guidelines. I did not. I said that we were negotiating for the needs of our membership, and I was not talking about guidelines. That was a company's problem. That's a government's problem. My problem was to take care of the basic needs of our membership.
There is a hitch to any settlement by midnight. The union claims one company, Uniroyal, has reneged on the key cost of living clause, which jeopardizes an industry settlement. Bomarito threatens a strike against Uniroyal if and when he pleases, unless the company agrees again to go along with the cost of living provision. That hitch, plus the apparently big economic increase, will be thrashed out in Washington today. So far, the union is not threatening a strike at midnight. Chris Kelly, CBS News, Columbus, Ohio.
Steel haulers remain off the job in Ohio and some other states, and Mike Gottner of CBS radio affiliate WKBN in Youngstown reports the initial impact.
Republic Steel Corporation is the first company in Northeast Ohio to show the effects of the strike by steel haulers. Republic spokesman Lawrence Weeks says the company has either laid off or shortened the work week of over 1,000 employees in Youngstown, Warren, and Cleveland.
Steel haulers shutdown is having a very adverse effect to our ability to ship our finished product out of the plant. We will be shutting down finishing operations to virtually eliminate all finishing operations within the next week.
Weeks says if a strike lasts another 2 weeks, 50% of Republic's 25,000 employees will be on layoff. But the Teamster members who move steel here aren't showing any signs of ending their work stoppage. Trucker Jim Reese belongs to Teamster Local 377 and also is a member of the Teamsters for a Democratic Union.
The steel mills are hurting right now. Everybody knows that. There's going to be layoffs. This will continue and it'll get worse. If we have to, hey, we'll put our wives to work. They all agreed they go to work, but we ain't going back till we get what we want.
Truckers' efforts to shut down the industry have included picketers along highways and at truck stops who've been encouraging other drivers to park their rigs. Mike Gottner for CBS News in Youngstown.
Prison guards are off the job today at prisons throughout New York State in a wage dispute. They're striking in violation of a temporary court restraining order. Governor Hugh Carey has mobilized more than 8,000 National Guardsmen to help out in life support duties, but not to act as guards. No serious trouble has been reported. A powerful bomb shook downtown Rome this morning, so powerful that the explosion was heard throughout the Italian capital. Bert Quint reports what happened.
Terrorists struck literally at the heart of Rome early this morning. The site of the attack, the Capitoline Hill, where Rome was born. The specific target, City Hall, but no ordinary seat of local government this. Rome's municipal administration is quartered in buildings which, like the square on which they sit, were designed by perhaps the greatest artist of the Italian Renaissance, Michelangelo. The present mayor is a professor of art history who was elected on the Communist Party ticket. The bombers, apparently, are right-wing extremists, members of a group called the Revolutionary Armed Nuclei, which has claimed responsibility for attacks on communists and on other buildings where communists hold office. The purpose was not to kill anyone. The blast occurred in the Capitoline Square 50 minutes after midnight when the area was deserted. It did, however, blow a door off of the City Hall and caused serious damage in the square itself. The terrorist, in a telephone call to a leftist newspaper, threatened more bombings unless a colleague, whom they did not name, is released from jail before April 25th, anniversary of the liberation of Italy from fascist rule in 1945. Bert Quint, CBS News, Rome.
With 2 days to go in Rhodesia's black majority rule elections, there already has been a 50% turnout of the 2.9 million voters, black and white. Ian Mills has a status report.
The election officials said that more than 1.5 million votes have been cast in the first three full days of the 5 days of voting. They said this was more than 51% of the electorate. Voting slowed to a trickle today in the urban areas. The rural areas continue to record low voting. The authorities say this is because of the presence of Patriotic Front guerrillas and intimidation of rural area blacks. But internal Nationalist Party officials said today they believe voting will pick up again towards the end of the election. They expect a heavy turnout on Saturday, the last day. Party officials said that blacks throughout the country were being encouraged to vote by the unexpectedly high turnout so far. The next 36 hours will determine whether they're right. The election is being monitored by about 80 international observers, several of whom are now saying they found the election to be free and fair, and that they accept local claims that guerrilla intimidation has effectively stifled voting in the rural areas. Ian Mills for CBS News, Salisbury.
Official returns from yesterday's nationwide referendum in Egypt indicate almost unanimous support, as expected, for the peace treaty with Israel and President Sadat's projected domestic reforms. The National Transportation Safety Board is meeting again today in Washington, and it's expected to announce its formal conclusions on the cause of last September's mid-air collision over San Diego, an accident that took 144 lives. Richard Roth has details.
The Transportation Safety Board has already reached a tentative decision, putting primary blame for the crash on the crew of the Pacific Southwest Airways jet. The crew's failure to keep a small single-engine Cessna airplane in sight as the jet approached the San Diego airport, and the crew's failure to immediately notify air controllers when the small plane slipped from view. By the time controllers heard an alarm signifying a conflict in airspace, it may have been too late. Just 19 seconds later, the two aircraft fell to the ground. But voting on a final report on the accident today, the safety board will also cite factors contributing to the crash. One board member has already referred to what he called a lack of discipline in the PSA cockpit. There are questions about the smaller plane's course, 20 degrees off the heading ordered by air controllers. And there are recommendations to be issued, suggesting ways that might prevent an accident like the one in San Diego from ever happening again. Richard Roth, CBS News, Washington.
A Liberian oil tanker exploded during the night at the port of Nederland, Texas, near Houston, after being struck by lightning. One crewman is missing. Localized flooding caused by heavy rains impeded rescue efforts. The crest of the flooding Pearl River in Mississippi is still moving downstream, heading for the town of Columbia. It's expected to reach there Monday. Serious flooding is also reported in parts of Alabama, North Dakota, and Minnesota. President Carter leaves his vacation retreat in Georgia this morning after a stay of just over a week. And Lee Thornton reports from Jekyll Island that, for the press at least, it was a most unusual 8 days.
Reporters were housed almost 2 hours across the water from Sapelo, the Georgia island the president chose for this spring break. There were the usual number of relatively minor press releases, and well into the stay, White House Press Secretary Jody Powell appeared. He responded to the leak of secret congressional testimony by CIA Director Stan Steele Turner and predicted a victory for the White House on windfall profits tax legislation this year. Reporters waiting around in the tropical weather jumped at each bit of news. Did the president jog? How far? Did the president go fishing? How many did he catch? It was a most unusual time. And now it is almost over, but not quite. Today it's on to Plains, where there is no formal schedule, which almost always means Mr. Carter will take that walk down Main Street. Not necessarily news, but surely an event. Then on to Calhoun, Georgia, for the christening of the newest Carter grandchild before the vacation ends on Sunday. Lee Thornton, CBS News, Jekyll Island, Georgia.
Mr. Carter plans to visit South Korea in late June at the invitation of President Park Chung-hee. Revolutionary firing squads in Iran today executed three more one-time officials of the exiled Shah's regime. Officials in Washington are now saying that the administration has changed its mind and is willing to let the Shah come to this country to live when U.S. relations with Iran become more stable. No time frame given. The Shah and his family are now in the Bahamas.